Here's a quick word from our football educational partners over at the Scouting Academy.
Listen, we've said it all the time. If you love the analysis and you're passionate about football, then you really need to check out the Scouting Academy. Whether you're a football coach, aspiring writer, or even aspiring football agent, the Scouting Academy is really a perfect place for you to learn and develop your skills as an analyst. With curriculum that spans over 375 years of coaching and personnel experience, the Scouting Academy offers you a 16-week online course that you can tailor and build to meet your needs and your interests. Whether you're learning about wide receivers or defensive linemen, you can make the experience what you want it to be. Listen, I've said it to you on this podcast many times. I've spent my own money, my own time, and time away from my friends and family because I am just this passionate about this game. And the Scouting Academy is the place where I really feel like I've learned the most I've ever learned about the game of football. It's made me a better analyst. It's made me a better person in terms of the coaching I do on the field. I can't say enough great things about it. If you have any questions about the Scouting Academy, please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan Hatman on Twitter or reach out to the Scouting Academy online via email. I'm open to all questions as well. Heck, I'm still even a student there myself. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I really think that once you learn all the tools and gain the knowledge that they have to offer, I really think you're going to be absolutely excited about the game of football again.
This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
Welcome back to another edition of the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese, and joining me this evening, as always, is Mr. Matt Caraccio. Matt, welcome back. Tier Busters continues on with the wide receiver class this evening.
And boom goes the dynamite, Paul. I don't know what else to say about it because this is one of the most incredibly deep classes. And I think that we're going to see a lot of names, a lot of players that really could make NFL rosters better this year. But not all of them are going to be stars. But then again, not all of them have to be. So I'm actually really excited to kind of tease out some of the traits that are going to make these guys special, unique, and different at the next level.
Yeah, I mean, and I honestly thought this was one of the harder classes I've ever had to evaluate from any of the skill positions from any of the years that we've been doing this. I feel like I really have a good grasp of like my guys that are in like my top 10 to 12, but then like from like 13 to like 30, I feel like the margin between these guys is literally razor thin. That it's like I'm looking for one or two things that made these guys stand out. Some of these guys, you know, more than usual, I think the combine and some athletic testing could break some ties in that range for me, move some guys up and down, getting some actual measurements for some of the underclassmen guys who weren't at the Senior Bowl or the Shrine Game, because I can't remember so much, you know, so close in terms of evaluating guys, you know, from such a wide margin of like, you know, early teen rankings to like the guys in the 30s, guys who were going to be undrafted. Like, you know, like when we were, you know, watching film and I was, you know, breaking down my rankings and making my tiers, like there's a whole lot of guys that I have like round 5-6 grades on who are going undrafted. Some guys who I even probably have round 4 grades going undrafted because, like, you know, my tiers and rankings go down to like 48 guys, 50 guys. There's only like 30 of them who are going to be drafted probably, and that's if 30 guys get drafted, you know. So it's crazy to see how deep it is. You got a lot of bigger-bodied guys this year. You got a lot of guys in that slot category, those inside players, those quick in-and-out-of-break type guys. You have some hybrid guys that can do a little bit of everything. This class truly does have a wide variety of players, and I'm excited to just get right into it and break it down tonight because so many guys we probably want to talk about tonight. So let's get right into our tiers and let me kind of break down what tier one looks like for us at the wide receiver position. Tier one for us is the potential first round selection in the NFL draft. In terms of the fantasy spin, we think these guys are probably top 6 dynasty rookie picks. In terms of NFL contributions, we believe this is an immediate starter at the next level in 2 wide receiver sets. You know, to be honest with you, a team drafts a guy in the first round, they probably expect him to be a starter right out of the get-go, and that's what we're kind of classifying them as. So, Matt, why don't I actually throw this back to you? You know, wide receiver is a position you probably do more studying and research on than just about anybody. Who makes up your tier one? How deep was it? And was it hard to kind of narrow it down for you?
Well, Paul, I mean, it's no secret out there that I've really been kind of re-examining my own process and looking at myself as an evaluator and thinking about, you know, the actual meaning behind what we're evaluating when we look at players on the football field. And a lot of that, you know, problem solver paradigm that we keep talking about on this show has really kind of like grown and developed and even changed and still changing over the course of this past year. So I found myself going back to a lot of the film this year and seeing myself looking at players slightly differently. And it made some dramatic changes in one respect to certain players, and then others kind of helped, you know, kind of towed the line. And you're going to see right off the bat, starting right now, I mean, my biggest change really is at the top. I don't have AJ Brown at number one. I don't have him at number two. I actually have him at number three. My tier one contains Kelvin Harmon, DK Metcalf, and AJ Brown. And Paul, this kind of goes back to you in terms of, you know, I mean, you've been saying for a while that you really enjoyed Kelvin Harmon. You really like him. You love everything he brings to the game, body control, catch radius, hands, his ability to get in and out of his breaks, everything that you had talked about. I got to tell you, I don't disagree with a lot of it. I mean, you know, when I do look at Kelvin Harmon, his biggest strengths to me are obviously his size, his play speed, his competitive toughness, his play strength, and his contact fidelity. His weaknesses for me are his agility in the open field, his high speed change in direction routes, and his releases versus man. But to be honest with you, we talked about it on the previous show when we did tight ends. That play speed element is something that I've grown to appreciate even more because of the way it encapsulates so much of that problem-solving mentality into what we see from these players on a week-to-week basis. So I look at him and I say, you know, this is a player who I think is really maximizing the full range and depth of his physical capabilities within the realm of the problems he's asked to solve on the football field. And those problems that are representative, those really kind of contested catch situations, that press coverage at the line of scrimmage, you know, those opportunities, I really do think that, you know, he's showing to be functional at the very least in those areas. Yes, versus man, I think that he has some room to develop. I think that can come, though, because I think that, as I said earlier, that play speed that we talked about shows that he's able to connect to those variables on the football field that allow you to be faster than your opponent just by understanding the overall concept that you're participating in, whatever that route concept is, but also that sensitivity to your opponent's tendencies and how they may flip their hip or tilt their head or gesture in a way that allows you to kind of get them off balance. He's very good at destabilizing players. So I think that those are things that he can grow on and develop on, which is, again, why I'm calling this a problem solver paradigm, because, you know, it doesn't mean that you're never going to be able to build skill or develop skill. I think Kelvin Harmon does have another kind of layer to him. I do think he is at the top of his development curve. I think there's time for him to develop more, but I think we're kind of hitting the ceiling with him in terms of how much more. I think he's got a lot of command, but I think he's a bona fide number one guy. Going on to that just quickly, DK Metcalf is somebody that really needs little introduction. I mean, you're talking about size, his releases versus man, his catch radius, his contested situations, his overall athletic ability, and the full access that he has to those, to that range of athletic ability inside of his actual game, both at the top of the catch point, in terms of his catch radius, in terms of his explosion at the line of scrimmage. I mean, he can really access it in a kind of a moment to moment fashion if necessary. And I really love that about his game. And I think that he's only really, when we talk about development, I think he's really only beginning to scratch the surface of how sensitively attuned he can be as a wide receiver, because he already has a good sensitivity for space. It's just a matter of kind of marrying that to his route running ability and allowing that to kind of really blossom. So I think there's an opportunity for that. Is obviously his weaknesses, flexibility, coordination, multiple mid-stem moves. I didn't really see a lot of that. But again, I think there's room to grow on. And AJ Brown, I mean, we've talked about AJ Brown so often. It's kind of embarrassing. I mean, there's everything to like about him. I think he's a rock solid day one slot receiver or Z or flanker type receiver. I think he is absolutely the guy you're going to want. Muscular build, play strength, hands, body control, his separation quickness. Yeah, it's not something he has the athleticism to immediately separate with, but his play speed is good. And I think in the overall after the catch situations, I think he has the ability to not make guys miss, but he has enough contact fidelity in the way that he plays that he can get yards after the catch as well. So those are my top three. Paul, did you differ in any places? Did you add somebody? I know I went off on a tangent there, but did you add anything in particular to those guys?
Well, our tiers are pretty similar. I'm glad that you have came over to the Calvin Harmon train. And I love the fact that you brought up play speed, because I think that's going to be the thing for Calvin Harmon that I feel like I will push back on people a lot over the next couple months, that people who have questions about Calvin Harmon's long speed or separation quickness, I don't see those concerns being as important on the football field for him, because I think he plays a lot differently and a lot better than he might test at the combine. So as long as he goes to the combine and kind of runs like a 4.5 or a 4.55, something reasonable, I'm okay with that. I don't think I'm not expecting him to be this great athletic tester, but I think his play speed on the field is a lot quicker than maybe what his time speed's going to be. So he makes up the top of my tier one. I've been saying since last summer, he reminds me of Devontae Adams and Hakeem Nicks. And, you know, some people may not remember how good Hakeem Nicks was for a period of time with the Giants before, you know, he got injured. Former first round pick, had a really good handful of years before injuries kind of derailed his career. And Devontae Adams, I really liked a lot too coming out of college, and it took him a couple years to get going. And now he's become one of the top wide receivers in the NFL. I think Calvin Harmon is almost unstoppable on the back shoulder throw. Now, Ryan Finley, his quarterback, was very good at throwing that as well. But most defensive backs were unable to stay with Calvin Harmon. I think that's going to translate at the next level. Him using that body control, the ability to adjust, I think that's going to translate, and he's going to be able to do that at the next level. Number two in my tier one, though, is Marquise Brown. So that's the only different in terms of players. Some might say I'm falling into the trap of John Ross, but I think Marquise Brown is a different type of player than John Ross. I think he's a better pure route runner in terms of his receiving skills. I think he can win at all three levels of the field. Is the size and frame questions and the durability for sure. I mean, we just found out this week he's not going to be able to perform at the combine, not going to be able to perform at the pro day, had surgery on his foot. That Lisfranc that you hear about often with football players or basketball players is a serious injury. But on the field, I think he's an explosive playmaker at all three levels. I think he's really quick in and out of his breaks. Obviously, you know, the body and the strength of defensive backs to the next level could give him some issues, but I think they're going to be so scared by his speed that I don't know how close they're going to be able to get up to him, or if they're going to be willing to try to hold him and really press him at the line of scrimmage. Because if he gets by them, it's over. It's going to the house for six if you don't have, you know, consistent help behind him. I just think he's a playmaker. I don't think he's just a vertical threat like DeSean Jackson. I think he's a little bit more of a well-rounded player that can run good routes in the short to intermediate and be a playmaker after the catch as well. AJ Brown for me is number three. To me, we've been saying this for a while, Juju Smith, that Anquan Boldin type, you know, great play strength. I think he's got enough quickness, and the quickness in his routes combined with that play strength and physicality in his routes and during his routes and after the catch, I think gets Brown open regularly. You know, I think he's going to be, you know, like you said, an immediate starter. I love his game. I think he's got enough juice after the catch as well to make plays and uses that size to his advantage to break tackles regularly. And then DK Metcalf rounds out my tier one. I'm not naive. He's got the most upside and potential out of any wide receiver in this class. If it all hits, he can be a Dez Bryant-like star at the next level. But there is some route development that's got to go on. He's got to stay healthy. That neck injury is obviously something that NFL teams are going to examine closely. But his upside is through the roof. But he is a little bit raw. But he's in that tier one because of how much upside he does pertain in that. So that kind of makes my tier one there. I wrestled with it over the last couple of days, having two guys in there, three guys. I ended up settling on four and included Brown and Metcalf in there because I think Brown is ready to start right from day one. And I do think Metcalf's ceiling is just so high that he belongs to be there in round one. Any thoughts, Matt? Or you want me to take it to just kind of set the stage for tier two for us?
No, I just want to add one thing. I think the thing that I'm starting to think about more, and this was something that I was talking to guest of the show and friend of the show, Sean Mishka. I was talking to him about the idea where he really implored me to think about a little bit more of the limitations that we cite when we do evaluations, talking about the idea that when we actually look at those limitations and concerns, to what degree do we think that those limitations are things that, you know, he has the repository of skills to overcome? And it's kind of painted a new picture for me. And it's why I look at DK Metcalf and I look at, yes, there's development, but the development that he has is actually within range or within the scope of things that he already does in different aspects of his game. So the same sensitivity, explosiveness, and elusiveness that he may show after the catch, those are a lot of the same types of variables that he has to explore within his route running. And because he's able to do that after the catch, I think that there's at least kind of tangential evidence that he'll be able to do that, if that makes sense. So it's why I think that saying that he has potential isn't necessarily so unfounded. I think there's a lot of evidence within his current game that there is an ability for him to connect to those variables that will allow him to develop as a wide receiver. So that's where my kind of world kind of changed a little bit in my understanding of the position after I was talking a while with Sean.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes complete sense there. And it's something that, you know, since you did that summer seminar series last year, it's been something that we've talked about a lot. We've tried to incorporate it, you know, into our evaluations. And I think it makes complete sense. So let's transition this to tier two, what we consider tier two, because I do think as we go through here in the tiers, I do think we're going to start to see a little bit more difference in our tiers than are usual for us. We always joke around how our tiers end up being very similar. I think wide receiver, though, tends to be the one where sometimes is a little bit more, you know, difference in terms of what we're looking for and different nuances and different things that, you know, kind of jump out at us. So tier two are guys that we consider round two or round three prospects. So day two guys of the NFL draft. In terms of the fantasy spin, it's potentially round one to mid round two dynasty rookie picks. Obviously, depth chart and opportunity impacts a lot whether or not we're talking round one to mid round two. We think they're complementary wide receivers that should get immediate snaps in three wide receiver sets, and they have a chance to become a starter during their rookie season or by year two. I think most teams, you know, who make an investment in a wide receiver in the top 100 picks like to think that they're going to be a starter, you know, and I kind of consider starter, you know, top three wide receivers now. I think that's pretty much the norm in the NFL at this point. You know, I think that's what most teams, if they're making an investment in day two of the NFL draft, I think their hope and their likely, what they're hoping for is that by year two, these guys are starting in their three wide receiver packages, you know, which are probably 60-70% of the times now in the NFL. So Matt, what does your tier two look like at the wide receiver position?
So I'm going to kind of say this before I start going through this. This is definitely a loose order because they're tiered appropriately. They're tiered where I want them to be tiered, but I feel that as I continue to kind of turn this stone over, there's going to be some times where I'm like, man, this guy is so close. This guy is that close. It went to what you said, Paul, about being a razor thin kind of area between these guys. So I'm very confident this is my tiers, but I'm also saying that there could be some rearranging within the tiers. So starting right at the top, I do not think this guy is moving, and that is Deebo Samuel from South Carolina. He's my first guy in this tier, followed by Riley Ridley of Georgia, followed by N'Keal Harry of Arizona State, Terry McLaurin from Ohio State, Emmanuel Hall from Missouri, Marquise Brown from Oklahoma, Antoine Wesley from Texas Tech, Hunter Renfro from Clemson, Stanley Morgan Jr. from Nebraska, and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside from Stanford rounds out my next group. And again, I take that to heart when we say guys that could potentially start right now in three wide receiver sets. I really do think these guys can do that. I think these guys could be 100 picks. All of them could be. But again, draft capital drives the train, you know? So there might be guys in there that fall out of the top 100. And then at that point, it's going to be a much harder ride. But I think these guys have the talent to do that right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. And while there is definitely some differences in our tier two, it actually starts the exact same way, the first three guys in the tier. And I will piggyback off of what you said. I do think there's going to be a lot of movements within tiers. There's going to be some tier jumpers like there always is. But I think more than ever, especially the wide receiver position, going back to what I was saying before, there's going to be a lot of movement within the tiers as we get athletic testing, as more film becomes available for us to kind of cycle back to and watch on these guys. But I have Deebo Samuel there, you know, at the top of my tier two, followed by Riley Ridley, followed by N'Keal Harry. Those are my guys right at the top there. I think N'Keal Harry reminds me a lot of an Alshon Jeffrey type. I think for him, athletic testing is going to be big, but, you know, wins at the catch point, make the acrobatic catch, uses that body. He's got some good short area burst and acceleration after the catch. Riley Ridley is a guy who I just think he's going to be so much more productive and better as a pro than he was at college. And I'm going to be saying that about a couple Georgia guys tonight. But Ridley, I think, is a really good route runner. I think he's going to be a very good possession-style wide receiver. He can win vertically at times as well, but I think he's going to be a guy, you know, again, I'm not saying he's going to be as good as this, but much more in the mold of like a Michael Thomas, who can be that big slot guy, can be a possession guy on the outside. It's mostly going to work in that intermediate parts of the field, but great play strength, good route runner, really tough, you know, through the routes and after the catch. Really like Riley Ridley's game. Deebo Samuel all year, been saying he's DJ Moore 2.0, but a better route runner. Absolutely dominated at the Senior Bowl. Excited to see him at the combine. The rest of my tier two, though, is a little bit different and unique than some of the names Matt had in his tier two. I have Paris Campbell out of Ohio State. I'm excited about Paris Campbell. I think he's a guy who could really make an impact inside in the slot, but he's got a little bit more compact frame to him to kind of withstand the rigors inside there in the slot. I think he's explosive playmaker, great quickness, speed, burst, agility, elusiveness in the open field. Could use him in a lot of different ways. After that, I have Mecole Hardman out of Georgia, another Georgia player in this tier for me. I think if Hardman was in a different place, different offense, he'd be getting a lot of buzz similar to Marquise Brown in terms of his ability to get vertical, make plays after the catch, another explosive playmaker with elite level speed and athleticism. I really like Hardman a lot. I think there's a lot of untapped potential there with Hardman. And then my tier is rounded out with Hakeem Butler out of Iowa State, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside out of Stanford, and then Andy Isabella out of UMass. Start the two big guys, Hakeem Butler and Arcega-Whiteside. I do have some separation quickness and getting open concerns for both of those guys, but they're so good at the catch point that I think it makes it hard for me not to envision a scenario where a team is intrigued by them and drafts them in the top 100 and immediately gets them on the field in three wide receiver sets, probably kicking somebody else inside into the slot because they are very good at that. Butler, I think it was Sigmund Bloom last night, said, compared him to Plaxico Burress. And I've been struggling with a comparison, and I really like the Plaxico Burress one because Plaxico Burress, you know, was really great at the catch point, his ability to go up and get it, high point the ball. A lot of the same traits I see for Butler. Plax wasn't this great separator, you know, in his routes or anything like that, but he used his body well. It was big time vertical threat, even though he didn't have that elite speed. So I think Butler's got a lot of similarities. Arcega-Whiteside impressed me more going back and watching his film this year. I think he's a little bit better route runner than I gave him credit for, but uses that size, that, you know, that basketball style boxing out, you know, creating space at the catch point, you know, really well, that I like Arcega-Whiteside. And then Andy Isabella, I think, is one of the better route runners in the class with Marquise Brown, with Hunter Renfrow, but he's got jets too on top of that route running. That's kind of where it stands him out a little bit more than Hunter Renfrow for me, because I do think he's got, you know, elite level athleticism. I think he's going to run, you know, really fast. I think his agility drills are going to be really excellent, obviously, to step up in competition. But we saw some games against some high level opponents that Isabella was getting open, you know, pretty much at will this year. So I'm intrigued by him as one of the top slot wide receivers in this class. Matt, any thoughts on that, or you kind of just wanted me to set up my tier three and just keep this going?
No, I mean, I'll come back at a couple of points. I mean, I thought you raised some really good points about Hakeem Butler as well as J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. See, for me, I see a little bit more nuance, and that's the thing that I think I really appreciated a little bit more. Arcega-Whiteside to me, and Hakeem Butler is not that far off, as we'll see in a moment, But Arcega Whiteside for me is somebody that I saw a lot more nuance to his route running in 2018 than I felt like I saw in 2017. I felt like that there was more route deception in what he was trying to accomplish. There was more of a kind of keeping the defender on a string, kind of creating instability, creating indecision in the defender. And that's why I kind of catapulted him up. Antoine Wesley is a big guy that I know is going to dramatically be different for some people and not for others. I mean, at 6'5", 200 pounds, honestly, I saw incredible, incredible explosiveness out of this kid. I really enjoyed watching him play. And I know that there's going to be, you know, a lot of, you know, project oriented nature to him in terms of what people think he can be. But Antoine Wesley, when you watch him, when you look at his releases, when you look at what he does mid stem, what you look at, he does at the tops of his routes, what he can do after the catch. I mean, what you're looking at is, I mean, even though he's not in this draft, think about what Colin Johnson is at Texas. And I think that what you're talking about with Antoine Wesley is a very similar player to Colin Johnson, only I think you're talking about a guy who in Wesley that is even more of a nuanced route runner, if that's even possible, because he's not only a more nuanced route runner, I think he's a little bit more elusive after the catch. Antoine Wesley to me was a guy that I am shocked, just shocked. I really didn't have a bead on until going through this process. But I mean, I guess that's the plight of being a two person evaluation operation here. I mean, we get some of these guys kind of fall through the woodworks, but he does everything from the line of scrimmage against press coverage to everything against off coverage, what he does throughout his stem, what he does after the catch, what he does at the break point, what he does with the ball in his hands. He's an exceptionally, exceptionally agile player. So, I mean, I'm interested to see what Wesley ends up doing at the next level. He's a little bit more of maybe my heart's there instead of my head, but I still feel like my head's there as well. And I'm really excited to see him. He stands out tremendously for me. And I won't jump off the train with Terry McLaurin or Emmanuel Hall. I think those guys, Emmanuel Hall caught way more passes this year than I felt like he did last year. At least he looked a little bit more competent and more comfortable. I think Emmanuel Hall is going to, I mean, talking about blowing up the combine. There's a player that's going to absolutely blow up the combine. And the thing is, he blows up the combine and he's got a full access to that entire range of athletic abilities. And I think when you talk about him as a player, I think there's almost nothing to really nick him on until, you know, you get to his hands and you're like, man, but are you sure he can catch the football? I mean, he's got everything in spades. Athletic ability, releases versus press, high-speed change of direction routes are all strengths. But his yards after the catch and his hands, those are things that you got to be a little bit concerned about. And I thought this year he really checked those boxes a little bit, where I would put those a little bit more in the functional category. He gets the job done. And if he can get the job done and he can get open at will, now I think you're talking about a player who, in my opinion, you know, listen, he's 6'3", but he plays a lot more like DeSean Jackson. He plays a lot more like him. And if you look at DeSean Jackson and you say, what if we could draft DeSean Jackson? Dude, I'd take DeSean Jackson every time. I really wouldn't. I wouldn't mind. I really wouldn't mind in the day and age that we have to have DeSean Jackson throughout his prime. He was incredible. I mean, he really is an incredible. He's still playing. I mean, so I have no problem. I look at Emmanuel Hall and I see stylistically very much a DeSean Jackson type player. So those are just some of the places where we differed and why I think maybe they belong in that category. And Terry McLaurin, I said it before, he just really impressed at the Senior Bowl. And when you go back and look at his tape, he's a very nuanced route runner. He's very much, he's very much, ironically, he is to the outside of that passing game what Paris Campbell was to the inside of that passing game. They were really two sides of the same coin, just doing it in different parts of the field, in different areas of the field. Very explosive, very dynamic players that could attack all levels. But I think Paris Campbell, for me, the biggest reasons why I left him out, just to kind of comment on that, was because I still think that for him, very much like a couple of players that I'll talk about in the next tier, there's a lot of guys there that I think there's room for them to develop so they can be depended on more frequently. And I think Paris Campbell can do a lot of things, but I also wanted to see him become more of a complete route runner as well, just so he doesn't have to come off the field in certain situations. And I'm not sure that's the case right now, but I know that there's a platform for him to develop those for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are totally valid points about Campbell. And listen, a couple of the guys that you brought up, I'll just share my thoughts now. They're all in my tier three. Emmanuel Hall is actually right at the top of it. Antoine Wesley's in the middle of it, and so is Terry McLaurin. I mean, Emmanuel Hall, I'm right there with you. He's right at the top where we always, you know, we always look for those names that could be tier jumpers. He's the closest guy that could easily jump into my tier two. Wesley's in the middle of my tier right now. You know, he showed some burst and acceleration that I just did not expect to see when I was watching him. Excited to see how that translates at the combine in terms of his athletic numbers. And Terry McLaurin, like you said, late riser in the process here, looked great at the Senior Bowl. When you go back and watch his film, looked really good, you know, but he's rising up from a place where, you know, he was not getting much attention or much hype for a while. And now he's a little late to the party, but I'm really impressed with him, and we probably have him higher than most people even have him. So I think those guys are all very valid. I have him in tier three. You have him in tier two, but I can see your arguments in your case. And Hall in particular is a guy who really intrigues me. So let's kind of break down what tier three is made up of. These are late round three to round four guys. So they could sneak into the back end of night two of the NFL draft, but we think they're guys, you know, once you get to round four, you start getting more compensatory picks. That round four starts to stretch out a little bit, you know, probably has like 36 to 38 picks in it. So we think they're late round three or round four guys in our dynasty fantasy spin. We think they're mid round two to mid round three dynasty rookie picks. These players possess at least one starter level trait, but have lacked consistency and execution in certain areas of their game. Key word for this tier, potential, which means development is needed. Has a chance to develop into a top three wide receiver in an offense in the future. So, Matt, what does your tier three look like?
So to start off my tier three, I've got Preston Williams there. And I'll just start by saying if Preston Williams didn't have any of those off the field issues surrounding him, I think that we would be talking about him maybe amongst the tippy top of this group. But that doesn't mean to say he's a complete wide receiver. I mean, last year, you and I both were really comfortable despite everything going on with Antonio Callaway. I mean, we here at Saturday Sunday, to be honest with you, we don't think about anything off the field. We really just try to evaluate their film and see where they fit. And Preston Williams to me is extremely, extremely intriguing. There wasn't really an opportunity to dive into his film as closely as I would have wanted to. But when I did get the chance to it, I mean, you're talking about a player who, in terms of what he can do at the catch point, what he can do mid-stem, what he does in order to destabilize defenders is really impressive. And his overall play strength at the catch point, his ability to catch the football in contested situations, make catches through contact to the ground, really impressive. I like Preston Williams a lot. Hakeem Butler, I think we kind of unpacked him pretty well. He's my next guy. And then after that, I have a guy that I refuse to sour on, because if we're going to use that word developmental and we're going to talk about a player who could end up being more impressive, I think Anthony Johnson still has a role to play at the next level. And I think he could really impress at the next level even more. I mean, his overall strengths, I think blocking, his balance, his agility, his weaknesses or concerns are his contact fidelity within routes. And we saw that kind of at the Senior Bowl, high speed change of direction routes, things in contested situations. Again, we saw that at the Senior Bowl. But when you look at the litany of what he can do as a route runner, I mean, he's solid in his releases versus off coverage. He's functional in his releases versus man coverage. He's functional tracking the ball over his shoulder. He understands how to create a window for the quarterback. In terms of his route deception, you know, he's still developing as a route runner in that area. He's still developing his mid-stem moves, but he's functional in terms of his catch radius. He definitely understands how after the catch, he's functional in creating yards after the catch. He has good motor coordination when transitioning from a runner after the catch to a receiver. So he has that ability to transition quickly from receiver to runner after the catch. He has a lot of different elements to him that I think where you're saying that all these elements are on the precipice of being more than just functional and skillful. You're looking for those things to kind of take that next step. So I think there's the platform for him, you know, for him to develop these. I think he's got good kind of access to his overall athletic abilities, and I'm intrigued to see what he can do at the next level. Andy Isabella, I think you covered him really well, so I won't add anything to it. He comes after Anthony Johnson for me, followed by Paris Campbell, followed by a player that's been getting a lot of interest around the world right now, which is Greg Dortch. And, you know, Greg Dortch to me is a phenomenally interesting player. I think he's a guy that when you look at him on a film, I mean, his strengths are his athleticism, his elusiveness in the open field, his ability to transition and from catch to run. That ability is incredible for him. His contact fidelity and his play strength and his ability in tightly contested situations, I think, are a little bit in question. But overall, I mean, when you look at him as a player, you know, I think he's the type of player that's best suited for kind of a West Coast or option route heavy passing game from the slot. And I think he can be utilized in those schemes because he has that above average athletic ability. He has that functional route running. He has hands. He has above average run after catch ability. He excels in the screen game. I think he's really good on a spread team that utilizes an RPO running game, and he can immediately contribute on punt returns. So, I mean, I think he's a player that offers a great range of ability and some good depth of ability. And I think he's a player who could find his way into a starting lineup at some point. Keyshawn Johnson from Fresno State. I definitely like Keyshawn Johnson. He's a tremendously interesting player to me. He was a player that came on the scene, obviously, as a result of the fact that all the All-Star games, I mean, you know, he was obviously a participant, and I was just like infatuated with trying to get an understanding of what he was as a player because, you know, I heard the name, so to speak, thrown around, but I hadn't gotten a chance to watch him. And when I did watch him, you see that his releases versus off coverage is good. He can vary his visual gaze and tempo and angle of attack. He's good in high-speed change of direction route type situations on slant, curls, and outs. Overall, his agility after the catch, his deep routes, contested situations, and blocking, these are definitely little areas of concern. But he possesses the athletic ability with that flexibility, balance, his overall acceleration, his change of direction speed. He really does have that ability to really be good in those situations. I see him more as a technician that's probably best suited to a West Coast scheme. And I think he has the opportunity to really be at the very worst in a top four. But I think he's more than that. Cody Thompson, we've mentioned him several times on the show. I love Cody Thompson. I think he's one of the guys I would earmark as a player that could jump this tier from the middle. If I have a guy in the middle who could jump, I think Cody Thompson could. Little Jordan Humphrey is followed by Penny Hart. Deontay Johnson is another player that I think Paul and I were just like kind of texting fire emojis because between everything that we've seen from him, he can do everything that you would want to see from a wide receiver, but he does it in such a compact frame. I mean, he's 5'11", 188 pounds, but he plays incredibly well at that size and at that height. I mean, what he does at the line of scrimmage versus press coverage, what he does mid-stem to destabilize defenders, what he does at the tops of his routes to create separation. I mean, honestly, he really was very difficult to press at the line of scrimmage. He was incredibly difficult to press at the line of scrimmage. He had a multitude of solutions for that problem, and it was interesting to watch him work. I really like Deontay Johnson. He's a player who could easily, I could see, starting in the top three in his respective team. Finishing it off, we have Terry Godwin in this tier as well as Tyree Brady. Tyree Brady from Marshall, I continue to say this, he just reminds me, I get the same kind of urge in the kind of pit of my stomach that I did with Kenny Galladay. You know, absolutely rock solid across the board. You know, he doesn't really, you don't watch him and go, wow, jumps off the page. But man, is he just rock solid in what he does. And Tyree Brady is a player that I would continue to keep your eye on. I think there's an opportunity for him at the NFL level to be a very consistent producer. And at the very worst, he's going to fill out a depth chart at a bare minimum. So that's kind of where my tier three is across the board. It's a massive tier three, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. I mean, my tier is ridiculously big. There's absolutely no way these guys are all late round three and or all of round four type guys. A lot of these guys are going to go round five, six, seven. Maybe some get pushed up to earlier in round three, but a lot of them are going to get pushed down to the last few rounds of the NFL draft. But right now, this is kind of where I value them. And this is where I'm saying the razor thin margin between these guys. And it's not just this. It goes into the next tier. It was a couple of the guys at the back end of tier two. It's just really, really close. So my tier three starts out, like I said before, with Emmanuel Hall. I'm not going to say much more about him. Next up is Stanley Morgan Jr. I've been a big fan of Stanley Morgan Jr. I was stunned he was not invited to either the Shrine Game or the Senior Bowl. I think it was their biggest mistake in the two All-Star games. I think he's one of the better route runners, possibly the best route runner in the entire draft class. He doesn't have elite athleticism, but he's got really good separation quickness, really smart in and out of his breaks. I think he's got great play strength for his size. I think he's got some elusiveness and quickness after the catch. I really like Stanley Morgan Jr.'s game. I think he would be a great day three value for a team looking for a guy to play inside in the slot. I think that's Stanley Morgan Jr. Next up for me is Greg Dortch. I thought you did a perfect job outlining who he is as a prospect and the areas of concern for him. Next up for me is Preston Williams. You talked about him right there with you, that I think he'd be getting a lot of, top round three buzz in the NFL draft circles if it wasn't for the off the field stuff. I think we're putting him in this tier, which we're kind of saying that's kind of where his talent lies. Late round three or somewhere in round four, we kind of think Preston Williams has that type of talent. If he was played, former Tennessee recruit, I believe, big time recruit there. I mean, if he played in the SEC and did some of the stuff he was doing, he would definitely be a guy garnering, top round one, round two attention. Anthony Johnson out of Buffalo. I think you said it best about him. I didn't love his performance at the Senior Bowl, but I wasn't ready to drop him down any further than this. I still love his length, his body control, his ability to win at the catch point. He doesn't win it with the ability to high point and elite jumping ability. He just does it with body control, being able to adjust and just using his size and his length to his advantage. I like him a lot. Terry McLaurin out of Ohio State. We talked about him already. Jalen Hurd out of Baylor, former running back at it from Tennessee. Really intriguing player because they used him mostly as a slot guy at Baylor, but I think he can play on the outside as well with his length, his catch radius, his speed to get vertically down the field as well, but also can be a weapon inside in the slot. Still learning the position, so a lot of route development still, but I love his upside. He can still be used in certain running back situations, goal line, short yardage areas of strength that he showed when he was a running back, so Hurd intrigues me. Keelan Doss out of UC Davis, we saw him down at the Senior Bowl. Daniel Jeremiah kept comping him to a guy like Keenan Allen. Very smart, savvy route runner, probably a big slot guy at the NFL level, elite collegiate production, won the state, UC Davis, and kind of make a brand there. Rather had options to move to a bigger program, but decided not to. Keyshawn Johnson out of Fresno State, another guy who I think is going to be a slot at the next level. Love his ability to extend for passes, can go up and get it as well, but I think a good route runner, good separation quickness, some elusiveness and agility after the catch. He intrigues me. Antoine Wesley out of Texas Tech, we talked about him. Deontay Johnson out of Toledo, you really described his game great before, explosive playmaker on the outside, can get vertical, can win at all different levels of the field. Then a bunch of slot guys for me here. Penny Hart out of Georgia Southern, combine snub, should definitely be there. Showed great quickness in and out of breaks, elusiveness and agility in the open field at the Senior Bowl. Really intriguing player, could definitely play in four wide receiver sets right away and work his way up to be the starting slot guy. Hunter Renfro out of Clemson, again, size and frame are a concern, but all he does is get open and make plays. Doesn't have the athleticism, I don't think, of a Penny Hart or an Andy Isabella, but really good route running, that quickness in and out of breaks is going to make him move the chains as a first down guy. I think Wayne Corbett from back in the day, great comp for him. Little Jordan Humphrey, big slot guy, really strong, physical in his routes and after the catch, can break tackles. Really liked Humphrey in that position, playing inside in that regards. And then my tier rounds out with David Sills out of West Virginia. Great length, catch radius, ability to get vertical down the field. Have some major questions about separation, quickness, and long speed, but the ability to win at the catch point. He's still transitioning to being a full-time wide receiver. He left West Virginia because he wanted to play quarterback like he did at high school. Then he came back. So he's still developing his route tree and stuff like that, but his ball skills are great. His ability to get vertical also as well and make the difficult catch down the field are all traits to stand out. And then Tyree Brady, you talked about him before. I'm right there with you, liking his overall game. I've compared him to Marvin Jones a lot for his ability to get vertical down the field, win at the catch point, go up and get it, contort his body. I like Tyree Brady's game an awful lot. So, I mean, that tier for me, like you, Matt, is massive. A lot of intriguing names there. Anybody jump out that I included in that tier that maybe you were thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest guy that I think you mentioned that really stood to me is really a guy who ends up leading off the top of my next tier. So I'll kind of leave it there, is David Sills. I didn't know what to do with David Sills. You know, there's elements of his game when you talk about tracking the ball over his shoulder, when you talk about, you know, adjusting throughout his route to really break it off when necessary to make the catch. All the things you want to see about, you know, a player's kind of sensitivity, again, to where a defender is relative to the ball being thrown, relative to my placement against the sideline. How am I going to be able to extend and make those catches and be able to do that? Those things are intact for him. But I think he did a really good job kind of highlighting some of the weaknesses, which is, I'm not really sure I see that sensitivity in his route stems. I don't see him necessarily, you know, destabilizing defenders in a consistent way. I don't see much variability in his solutions. So I don't see a player who is fully developed in terms of his route tree. And the thing is, Paul, is that, you know, how we talked about development as being something that, you know, I'm beginning to kind of toy around with, because maybe there's room in the evaluative process for this. Maybe it's something that we really need to examine, because maybe we can give some structure to this word potential that might be more meaningful. In order to do that, I'm toying with the idea of asking myself, you know, when you watch these players, what do you see about their solutions to certain problems that have elements that behave similarly to what you want them to evolve into? Maybe that's a way to look at potential. And the thing is, when I look at David Sills, I see a lot of sensitivity to, you know, spatial kind of relationships between him and the defender, some kind of, feedback in terms of his ability to kind of manage contested situations and make catches. I see his ability to kind of get vertical at the line of scrimmage. I see him understand the use of his speed, and he has full access to it. The thing is that I don't see anything other than breaking off your route stem that makes me think that the development curve for him necessarily is going to trend into becoming a really adept route runner, unless he kind of really goes to work with that in whatever organization he's drafted into. I think the physical capacities are there, but I don't know if I've seen him in kind of similar problems with similar elements really do the same thing, if he's really accessed that. I don't know if I'm making sense with that. I don't know, Paul, what do you think?
No, yeah, I think you're right. And I forget what podcast I was on, but they had a really intriguing idea of, like, they were saying that, you know, maybe he can be a big slot at the next level. And they were kind of comping him to Cooper Kupp a little bit. And I personally didn't see that. Like, I thought Cooper Kupp was a very nuanced route runner.
He was a great route runner.
I get maybe, I don't know if they were trying to say it was a direct correlation in terms of what their game was right now or coming into the NFL. Maybe it was them kind of projecting that he might not have that vertical speed to play on the outside, but they think his game could maybe translate inside as he continues to develop his game. So I didn't know exactly, you know, they didn't go into great detail on it. So, but it was an intriguing idea as he continues to develop, is that, you know, maybe he doesn't have the vertical speed to play outside, but he is apparently, you know, great work ethic, you know, has already taken great strides at the position to turn into the player he is, that, you know, maybe he could continue to increase that development to learn how to maybe play from inside. I don't see it with him, but I think maybe that's where they were trying to see another scenario that could potentially, you know, make him a valuable asset at the next level. So I'm right there with you. I have some concerns about his game. I think we're probably, you know, if you think about where we have him in our straight rankings, we're probably a little lower than maybe we're going to see him in other places. And it's not that we don't see the upside and potentially has, but we do have some questions in terms of his athleticism and that ability to run precise routes, I think.
Well, you know, and this is the thing that I'm talking about. And this is where I'm kind of asking everybody that's listening right now, if you made it this far in this 5.5 hour show, then I'm sure I'm going to hold you on for 5 more minutes. But I'm just asking the question, what does potential really mean? And if we examine what potential could be, could we frame potential as being something that there's evidence for in other skills that the player possesses? So in other words, if you can't tie this idea of potential to other skills, which are other problems that they are capable of solving, which means that they have capacities to solve those problems. If you can't tie it to some of that, then how do we know that potential is really going to be realized? That's where my head's at. That's what I'm toying around with. Maybe I'm 100% off base. It's just at least a model for framing what potential could mean if we had to.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I think that makes sense. I think that's what we're trying to talk about here. So let's take this to tier four. These are guys that we think are round five, round six NFL selections. A lot of these guys probably end up going round seven or even as UDFA free agents. In terms of your dynasty rookie draft, you know, this can be, you know, late round three to round four type dynasty rookie picks. These are role players or specialists, players who provide depth for a franchise, and they may get a chance at significant snaps should a starter falter. They could play in four wide sets consistently. So I think we're talking wide receiver four, wide receiver five, potentially on a depth chart. You know, a lot of teams at the NFL have five or six wide receivers. You know, four wide is very popular. So we think these guys have a chance to potentially become guys that play in four wide receiver sets. So not guys who are going to be in the top three on the depth chart, but maybe in that 4-5 range. So Matt, why don't you run through your list in its entirety and then maybe pick out a few names that maybe intrigue you the most. And that's kind of how we'll do tier four and tier five here to round out the tiers for the deep wide receiver position.
You know what? Honestly, I'm going to run through, yeah, like you said. So I'll go through tier four and tier five. Is that what you like me to do?
No, go through tier four right now and just maybe mention one or two names that intrigue you the most.
Sure. So, I mean, I'm going to run through these guys, and I'll say that, honestly, tier four might be full of some of the most intriguing players in this class to me. And that goes with David Sills, who we spoke about kind of earlier, Keelan Doss, who Paul has in tier three and I have in tier four, DeMarcus Lodge from Ole Miss, Travis Fulgham from Old Dominion, Alex Wesley from Northern Colorado, and a player that has grown on me significantly, Jacoby Myers from NC State. Those guys all together, all of those guys really are intriguing to me. If I really had to kind of push comes to shove, pick a guy, I'd probably say the guy that's most intriguing to me is probably going to be Keelan Doss or DeMarcus Lodge. So the fact that we already talked about Keelan Doss, I'll leave that alone, but I think DeMarcus Lodge is worth at least pointing out. The reason being is that, you know, when you look at DeMarcus Lodge and you look at where he played, you know, he played at Ole Miss amongst, you know, AJ Brown and DK Metcalf. And what we could say is we could probably argue that he wasn't getting the majority of the time, maybe the players or the team's best corner. That may or may not be true all the time, but I think it's something to point out because of the other players that they had to worry about. But that being said, I thought Lodge's strengths were really his blocking, his curl routes, his releases versus press, his body control along the sideline, and where he was able to find the missing spaces in zone. I thought he was very adept at finding areas within zones to kind of exploit for his quarterback. And I think that's really important at the next level, especially what you see with all these matchup zone concepts that these teams are running. His weaknesses, I didn't think he was particularly agile after the catch. I didn't see a lot of explosive strength from him as a player. I didn't see it in terms of his acceleration at the line of scrimmage. I really didn't see a player that was extremely powerful in open field. He didn't have tremendous contact fidelity. His deep routes were okay. Again, I think that when it came to creating yards after the catch, that would be the place that I'd kind of knock him a little bit. I think he's best suited in an option route kind of heavy passing scheme from a flanker or slot position where he can utilize that play speed, that play strength, as well as that body control to attack the short and intermediate areas of the field. I think DeMarcus Lodge is a player who could catapult himself into a third wide receiver situation or fourth wide receiver situation on a very consistent basis. So he's a player that I'm interested in. I'm interested in tracking it and seeing where he ends up going and where he ends up landing.
Yeah, I mean, Lodge is a guy who's in my tier four. He's an intriguing prospect for sure. I think he's a guy who can win vertically down the field. I like his body control, his ability to adjust. So I'm right there with you. Lodge is an intriguing name for me. Other guys in my tier four are Cody Thompson out of Toledo, Terry Godwin out of Georgia, Jacoby Myers out of NC State, Dylan Mitchell out of Oregon, Darius Slayton out of Auburn, Felton Davis out of Michigan State, Travis Fulgham out of Old Dominion, Miles Boykin out of Notre Dame, Jamal Custis out of Syracuse, and Gary Jennings out of West Virginia. A couple thoughts on some guys. Cody Thompson, you mentioned him before. Really good athleticism. A guy who can win inside or outside. Really crisp route runner. I like Cody Thompson's game a lot. I think injuries and durability are some question marks that he's got to answer. Terry Godwin looked uncoverable at the East-West Shrine game. Former big-time five-star recruit. Great athleticism, quickness, and speed. I think he's a slot player, but has the capabilities to get vertical. Jacoby Myers, I think, is very similar to a guy before like Keyshawn Johnson. I think he's going to be a slot guy. I don't think he's as good of a route runner as Keyshawn Johnson, but I think that's his calling card at the next level. Dylan Mitchell, athletic kid, some quickness, some speed to his game. I know some people like him more than me. I watched as much as I can find on him, thinking that maybe I was missing something. I think he's a day three type prospect. There's some games. I think he put up a really good statistical year for Oregon, but I'm not sure it all translates to the next level. There's some things about him in terms of his athleticism, quickness, elusiveness that are intriguing, and I think makes him, you know, warrant a pick there on day three, probably in round five or so. But I don't think I see me personally a top 100 grade on him. Darius Slayton out of Auburn, I think, is a guy who, again, Auburn's wide receivers struggled this year because of the offense, the quarterback. But I think Darius Slayton's got some talent to be a vertical threat on the outside. You know, good athleticism, good quickness and speed. I like Slayton's game. I think Felton Davis is a big slot or possession, you know, flanker at the next level. Good hands, ability to extend. I think this year he was hurt by Brian Lewerke taking a little bit of a regression and step back. And then the big guys, Travis Fulgham, Miles Boykin, and Jamal Custis, all win at the catch point. Good size, good length, you know, use their body to their advantage. I think all of them are role players that would be good red zone threats at the next level. And then Gary Jennings out of West Virginia looked really good at the Senior Bowl. He's a guy who was more of a possession-style wide receiver his first couple of years at West Virginia, but took a little bit of a different route this year, was used more, a little bit more vertically down the field, so showed that versatility to play inside and play outside. I think at the NFL level, he's probably more of a possession outside wide receiver than a vertical threat. So that kind of makes up that tier four of those guys. Matt, let me just take it right to tier five. Tier five is late round guys, a lot of UDFA prospects in terms of fantasy, late round watch list type guys, developmental wide receivers, or guys that right now just limited exposures to make a true determination. You don't even have to run through your whole tier five if you don't want to, but is there a name or two that intrigues you from your tier five that maybe you have to watch more film on and then maybe properly place them, or a guy that you put down here because you think he's going to be a late round pick but you see something that intrigues you about their game?
I think the biggest guy that stands out to me here, that is, I'll give you one guy that I want to watch more film on, and I haven't really placed him enough. And you already mentioned him earlier in Mecole Hardman, where you had him very high. So I'm excited to watch him for sure. A guy that I think is really interesting to me is really a guy that I had in tier five was Gary Jennings from West Virginia. I think he's interesting. I think he has some moments, especially in that West Virginia offense when he was there with Will Grier. I think there's a lot of things to like about his game. I think he falls into that world of the Alex Wesleys and the Terry Godwins of the world. And I think that type of range of outcomes is fair for him. And I think that's something where he could very well see his way fit to really seeing his stock rise a little bit once he gets into the league.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, I had him right there at the end of tier four. He could have been in tier five. Absolutely. For me, my tier five looks like this. It's Jalen Smith out of Louisville. Really took a step back this year without Lamar Jackson there, but still's got ball skills, still uses his body to create space at the catch point. He just looked a little bit thicker this year, a little bit less athletic than previous years. Be interesting to see him at the combine, how he looks if he trimmed down a little bit from the Senior Bowl. You just mentioned Alex Wesley at Northern Colorado. Really good speedster guy, vertical threat. He's a track and field background type. So he's a vertical threat, late round guy. Jamarius Way out of South Alabama, real big bodied red zone guy, uses his body to create space at the catch point. Red zone threat for sure. He's a little bit intriguing. Johnny Dixon out of Ohio State. I mean, so many guys at Ohio State, they just Dwayne Haskins just spread out his passing touchdowns so much between all these guys. But Johnny Dixon had some moments where he looked, you know, good inside, outside player, can get vertically down the field. Nyquan Murray out of Florida State, more of a slot guy, quicker than fast, good agility and elusiveness in the open field. And then it rounds out with Emmanuel Butler out of Northern Arizona, Jazz Ferguson out of Northwestern State, Ryan Davis out of Auburn, the slot guy, more of a after the catch type guy, screens, check downs, quick slants, you know, jet sweeps and stuff like that. That's Ryan Davis out of Auburn, and then BC Johnson out of Colorado State. So that kind of does it. Guys, there's so many wide receivers that Matt and I just talked about tonight. Like I said before, you can make the case from like 12 to like 30 is razor thin. You can mix them up, shake them up. You ask, you know, 10 different people, and they're going to have guys all over the map. It makes for a really, really intriguing draft class. There's a little bit of every type that you're looking for. I do think there's going to be more movement in my wide receiver rankings and tiers, probably more than I've ever had at any position in the years that I've been doing this, because I do think that that margin is so small this year. Matt, are you kind of feeling the same way?
Yeah, no, I'm feeling a tremendous amount of movement throughout these tiers. And even some of these, you know, even within the tiers, but also there's some of these fringe guys that could jump up. I mean, why do they jump up? Why can they jump up after all this discussion, talk, and analysis? Well, to be honest with you, I mean, there's more analysis to do for all these guys. I mean, I can't say I've exhausted every single resource available. And yes, the combine is still out there, and that is a data point. Whatever we want to glean from it, good, bad, or otherwise, it's still another data point. Paul, I'm going to ask you though. I'd like to go swimming one more time, just like we kind of did in the last episode. Give me a scuba guy. Give me a guy, your scuba, your top of the water, a guy that you really like that you might try to acquire, whether it be in a dynasty draft, or you can even play GM right now and take over the New York Giants. Not that we need wide receivers, but who do you like? Give me a scuba level player that's probably outside of your first tier and probably in the middle to latter half of your second tier and on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna keep riding the train of Stanley Morgan Jr. out of Nebraska. He's in my third tier. But honestly, where I have him, I think it's probably even higher than and you too. I think we're probably higher than most people are going to have Stanley Morgan. I think most people are going to look at him as a round six or round seven guy. And you know what? Maybe that's where he ends up getting taken. But I think he's a better prospect than that. I know we are at times, you know, are a little bit, we really harp on the route running because we do think that is something that translate. And, you know, I think more times than not, that serves us well. I mean, there are times that, you know, we see a good route runner, it doesn't translate. A lot of things go into that. But I like Stanley Morgan Jr.'s game. Listen, there's a lot of slot guys in this draft class, and they come in all shapes and sizes, from big slot guys like little Jordan Humphrey to small guys like Hunter Renfro and Andy Isabella and Penny Hart, and all different sizes and shapes and speeds and athleticisms in between. I think Stanley Morgan is a little bit of a blend of both of those. I think he's got good size for the slot at like 6'1". I love his play strength. I don't think he's a guy who's going to jump off the page at you at the combine or anything like that. But I think he, when I watch him, he looks very savvy in his routes, like a guy who can get open pretty much at will with a variety of ways. He's not always going to use the same thing, which is maybe his quickness or agility or something like that. So I just like his game. He's a guy who I like from the summer, and I'm going to continue to kind of pound the table for him. And I think he's probably going to go on day three, and I think he's going to be really present good value. And he could be a guy that really goes under the radar and could make a difference at the next level.
So I'm going to kind of take this from two perspectives. I think I'm going to go on the scuba level that we're going on right now. I think I'm going to take it from first the fantasy perspective, and then I'll take it from the GM perspective. So from the fantasy perspective, I think the player that we really need to watch out for, a player that I like that could end up being a headliner, I think there's a lot to like about Emmanuel Hall. I think Emmanuel Hall could easily get onto a team that lacks that vertical speed downfield, and he could end up just being an absolute vacuum cleaner for a team because they lack the vertical threat. And Emmanuel Hall, talk about a player that can get open at will. He has a variety a variety of tools in his toolbox. Now, he doesn't win the same way that Stanley Morgan does, not anywhere near the same level of route deception, but he does have the speed which he can use and access to its fullest range at a given moment. And that gives him that X factor to create in places that Stanley Morgan may have to create differently. Emmanuel Hall is capable of doing it. And he's 6'3" on top of it. So if his hands and catch radius and everything are all the same, I really do like Emmanuel Hall as a scuba player for fantasy teams. I think he could end up in a really, really nice situation. And then if I'm a GM and I'm and I'm saying, who's a scuba player that I could take, you know, that's going to really kind of do myself well for my team? I know this is going to sound crazy, Paul, but I think that I'm probably going to invest in a guy like a Hunter Renfro. I mean, I know I'm going to take him late in drafts, but I feel like I'm just going to win with a guy like that. I feel like he's the guy who makes that. I mean, I know it's cliche to talk about Julian Edelman because of what he just did in the Super Bowl, but he's that type of guy where it's just like he's going to make the catches that move the chains and win games. Hell, he did it already in college. So when I look at him and I'm like, man, is this a guy that's going to help my team? I think he's going to help my team, and I think I'm going to get him at a ridiculously stupid discount. I don't think you're going to see him go off the board. I know there's talk of him going in round 3. I don't know if he goes in round 3. They're saying it's a fringe round 3, round 4 type of sentiment. I'm pretty good. I'm thinking round 3. I'm thinking he's a guy that I could get probably in round 4 pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think when push comes to shove and how deep this class is, I wouldn't even be surprised if he's a round 5 NFL pick. Like, I mean, that's how, yeah. I think that's the type of value I think he's going to provide. And like you said, like, it's hard to put a true value on a guy like him. And I think some NFL teams will struggle with that too, because it's like, okay, you kind of know who he is. Like you talked about that at the top of the show with Calvin Harmon. He's probably reached his ceiling potentially in terms of his development. Hunter Renfro is probably not getting much different as a player. So it's like, could you go for a guy who's got maybe some more upside, more potential, more athleticism? Sure. But you may not be that guy might never reach what Hunter Renfro has the capabilities of doing, of being that reliable pass catching guy to keep the chains moving. And for some teams, he would be, you know, a welcome asset to a lot of NFL rosters. I don't know if it'll translate to fantasy, because I don't think it will, to be honest with you.
That was me as a GM.
He'd have to be in a high-volume passing offense and see a lot of targets. Yeah. But in terms of NFL value, I think it's tremendous. And my one other guy, since you threw out two, I'll kind of jump back in to kind of close it out. I'm really intrigued by Diontae Johnson. If you wanted to tell me, pick a guy who's
you're going all the way down to submarine level. So that's your submarine guy?
He's my submarine guy. If I was going a guy outside of my top 15 right now, a guy who could be a day three pick, who could turn into a bona fide starting wide receiver and two wide receiver sets down the line, I think it's Diontae Johnson out of Toledo.
And if I had to go outside of my top 15 guys and look down, I would say my deep submarine guy is probably going to be Cody Thompson. I think Cody Thompson emerges if he stays healthy, and he's a guy that I would kind of hitch my wagon to, because I think he's got a lot working for him. So, Paul, outstanding episode, incredible, like, deep dive into this class, and I think we've only really begun to even scratch the surface of the full breadth of what they can do.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be talking wide receivers a lot in the rest of the pre-draft process here to kind of sort this out a little bit. A couple housekeeping things real quick. First off, a huge thank you to all the people over the last week who have went out and bought the Saturday to Sunday premium notebooks. It is the best way to support the show, help us grow, help us reach a wider audience, help us do and bring to you what we do on a weekly basis throughout the year. So we greatly appreciate that. If you haven't done it, please get over to the website, SaturdaySundayFootball.com. Purchase it, click the premium content tab and purchase it. If you have any questions, please reach out to Matt or myself. Second off, we are going to take a one episode break from the tiers. to bring you a combine preview later this week, just for time purposes, you know, so people have, you know, a full like 5 to 7 days to kind of listen to the combine preview before the actual combine takes place. And then we will be back early next week to finish the tiers with the running backs. We're really excited to talk about the running backs. So you'll get a second episode of Saturday to Sunday later on this week, which will be the combine preview, and then another one early next week with the running back tier show to kind of close out our tier busters. And last housekeeping thing, I know if you follow us on Twitter, you've been seeing us talking about it. We have switched servers. Our RSS feed has changed for the podcast. It doesn't have a lot of big impact on most of you, but if you use some smaller podcasting apps such as Pocket Cast, such as Beyond Pod, it is possible that your podcast app is not updating the Saturday to Sunday podcast. If that is the case, if you are not seeing these Tier Buster shows regularly, you have to unsubscribe and resubscribe. So if you're listening to this, you know, maybe you listen directly from, you know, the website or something like that, and you're wondering why you haven't been seeing it on the your podcast app. That is the reason why, if you use some of these smaller podcast apps to listen. So please make sure, we don't want you to miss any episodes. We don't want to lose you as listeners. So please make sure you do that if you are not seeing the latest episodes. So there it is. The Tier Busters for the wide receivers in the books, like we did for quarterbacks, like we did for tight ends. One more to go. We look forward to bringing you that next week. So on behalf of Matt, on behalf of our sound and tech engineer, David Nakano, and myself, thank you for joining us. And we look forward next time taking you from Saturday to Sunday.